football's a game of chaos, and of course we have to train that way to be prepared for that, to all eventualities that can happen in games. But the things we can control and the things we can try and master are things like preparation. And for me, that goalkeeper going in more well prepared into not just training but into games as well, it can lead to better performance.
Hello, keepers, and welcome back to the new episode of the Club Sound Podcast. We are your hosts, Marcus Sundin, and alongside me is Alexander Brams, as always. Today, we're joined by a new guest, David Priest. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Really enjoy the podcast, the ones I've listened to before. So, yeah, it's a pleasure to be on.
It's a pleasure to have you on. And today we have an interesting topic in store. We're going to talk about the power of preparation, especially before games. We're going to talk about the mental preparation, becoming familiar with the other team that you're playing against, and obviously also their set pieces, which is very important, as we talked about before, and designing the training session to prepare for the team you're playing in the weekend. So before we jump into this topic, can you tell the listeners about yourself, what you've most recently have done? We know that you have been a professional goalkeeper and also a professional goalkeeper coach, but can you just briefly let the listeners know who you are and what you've done so far?
Yeah, so like you've just said there, you know, I had a playing career of about 23 years, starting at Sunderland. It took me to places like Aberdeen, Barnsley in Championship, and also to Denmark with Odense and Silkeborg. And when my playing career finished, when I was at Lincoln City, I was kind of player coach there. And that's when really when my coaching career started. At Lincoln City, and since then I've coached at Barnsley, went back to Barnsley and coached the under 18s and 23s there, and then I took a little time out from coaching for a couple of years to work full-time in the media, doing radio, podcasts and TV, which was to be honest, I absolutely loved that. It was a great time. And then about three and a half years ago, I was approached by Manchester City to join their recruitment staff. Xavi Mansesadora had created his own sort of department where he wanted to take all the recruitment, scouting, the analysis away from the big group, the main group. And so I spent a year looking at goalkeepers from Manchester City, assessing their own goalkeepers, seeing, which age groups it was right from under eights and under nines, all up to first team. And in that process, took part in the recruitment of Zach Steffen and Gavin Bazunu, both at City now. And then after a year there, then I got the opportunity to go to Sweden with Östersunds, with Ian Birchnell, who's the manager after Graham Potter. And I spent 2 years there until February this year as goalkeeping coach there. So after Östersund and towards the end of the season, I spent 3 months at Rochdale, coaching the goalkeepers of Rochdale in League One as a temporary arrangement until this summer when I'll be starting a full time run somewhere else. So pretty much that's my history.
Interesting. And if the listeners is wondering why your sound is so much better than ours, is that because obviously they can't see it, but you have a way better setup than we do, even though we are the podcast hosts.
Well, the thing is, I mean, when I was doing the media stuff, and I still do a lot of media stuff, especially writing for people like The Times and like a lot of podcasts with media, it really is something that's aided my knowledge of goalkeepers. I think, especially like I talked about with recruitment and scouting in Manchester City, and also doing the media stuff, just gives you a different angle rather than just being, from being a player and a coach, you've got two different angles there, and then totally take yourself away from that. So you try and be a little bit more, have a different perspective on things. It's helped greatly with that, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And if we a little bit into the topic, if we can talk a little bit about the difference between you being a player before and now being the goalkeeper coach. You've obviously been in the game for some years now, and you have been in the big development of goalkeeping as well. We have seen a big increase over the last couple of years in how we analyze the game and how different aspects, how many different aspects we have in the game. So talking about when you were a player and how you prepared for a game compared to how you prepare your players as a goalkeeper coach today, isn't there a big difference?
It's a huge difference. It's almost like it's a whole different ball game, really, because I think even if you look at just the research you can do in preparation of opposition, you know, even sort of back in the early 2000s, it was very difficult to get a lot of footage of teams, where now you have footage from the last few years, never mind the last few games, you know, in trying to get hold of DVDs of games and having to go through all the whole game just to get small parts of it that are relevant to you. It's time consuming. And of course, there wasn't anybody at the clubs, the analysts, who could help you with that as well, because it's a time consuming procedure. And I think that, and you spoke about how goalkeeping training has moved on, even just in the, you know, since I stopped playing in 2015 or something like that, 14, 15, even in that time, it's changed a hell of a lot. And I think that, you know, it's brilliant for goalkeeping, because I think for a long time, certainly over the whole course of my career, a lot of coaching and training was about doing things because that's the way we'd always done them. And we were very resistant to change and anything that was a little bit different. But as a player, I was always curious about, you know, finding that silver bullet, finding what was it that German goalkeepers, Dutch goalkeepers, what were they doing that was different to us? Because in my eyes, although in Britain we always have this this view that we had the best goalkeepers, I never really prescribed to that, because it was, especially like I said before, we saw all the footage that we do now. It was a case of we thought that because that's what we only saw. You know, in the 60s and 70s and 80s, we didn't see Russian goalkeepers. We didn't see a lot of German goalkeepers, apart from the very top few. So it was difficult to compare the two. And I think we can see by, certainly in the 90s, early 2000s, when you just see, there's a reason why there was a massive influx of foreign goalkeepers into the Premier League, simply because, one, they were better. And it's taken us up until now to kind of catch up with that. And I think what the FA are doing now with their with Tim Ditmer and the whole goalkeeping structure and development that's at the FA, they're slowly but surely turning the tide against that, and we're catching up everyone else. Because when I was a player, and we especially sort of say if I was at Aberdeen, we always went to Holland for pre-season. It was always great for me to go, you know, after I'd finished training, if we were training close to another club, going to watch their goalkeeper training, just to see what they were doing different, see what the difference was in because I always thought that our goalkeeping training, it was all predicated on hard work. You know, after every session, it was, instead of working smartly, it was just all about real hard work. And it's not that I was averse to doing hard work. I loved that side of it. I wanted to get better all the time. But I always thought there was a better way to do things.
Yeah, I think the development of goalkeeping with all the footage, as you mentioned, we have nowadays, is both for the good and the bad. And in the most recent episode, we were talking about this and how the social media affects goalkeeping and the position in general. And we can see that over the last couple of years, 5 years, 10 years, goalkeeping has developed rapid pace. But also, when we are talking about mental preparation, as I mentioned in the intro, we also see that when goalkeepers make a mistake, they get so much bad notice from it. And it's tough to be a goalkeeper nowadays. So when we talk about mental preparation, and we know that goalkeeper is a mental tough position to play, how would you prepare your goalkeepers mentally for the upcoming game in the weekend?
Well, I think first of all, preparation starts with training as well. I think that you know, there's so much. Football is a game of chaos, and of course, we have to train that way to be prepared for that, to all eventualities that can happen in games. But the things we can control and the things we can try and master are things like preparation. And for me, that a goalkeeper going in more well prepared into not just training but into games as well, it can lead to better performance. Now, whether that's, we talk about whether it's through the mental side of the game, whether it's the technical side of the game, knowing what to expect from opponents, what kind of, you know, we talk about set piece, what kind of deliveries can we expect, what kind of finishes do their strikers and attacking players tend to favour, penalties, free kicks, all these things. I think sometimes, you know, we've been a little bit lax, not to embrace that a little bit more. It's happening now, of course it is. But I've always appreciated, say, like American football in the NFL, where they have such a studious attitude to preparation for games. Now, of course, NFL, it's a game of set pieces. So then they have to prepare, you know what their different setups for attack and defense are. But I think that they take a real different attitude to preparation for games. And it's kind of like no stone is left unturned. And if a team does something that's totally out of the blue that you haven't seen before, then you can't do anything about that, you know. But if you can prepare yourself as best you can, then I think it just leads to better performance. And like I said, going back to training, I think that's where the mental preparation starts for me. You know, how can we put a goalkeeper in the right frame of mind so that one, it leads to better performance, and two, to put them in that state of flow, so that you get more consistency. Because I think a lot of the time with goalkeepers, we talk about mistakes and consistent performances. And I think if you can get that out of, you know, get that consistency, then it leads to less mistakes. And part of that, like I said, is the mental preparation, because we can prepare them physically. You know, I always work with the S&C coaches or whichever club that I work at. It's important that you work, that all the staff work in alignment, so that I want to make sure that I'm not doing anything that the S&C coach doesn't disagree with, and we come to an agreement with the goalkeeper how the, you know, best is for their preparation, which type of exercises, stretching, you know, dynamic preparation that you can do before they come to train. That's fine, they can do that, and I trust the sports science department when it comes to that. But also there's the mental side of it. You know, what's the best way to get the best out of a goalkeeping training? And a lot of that, I feel, is to do with the mental preparation, and that's every day. Now, there's two things that I've kind of, I did as a player, but also that, you know, I tried more, especially in the past few years when it's become a little bit more accepted by players and coaches to move into. And that's that was meditation. And that's, it's over the last few years, and certainly since I worked with a guy called Ruben Sanchez-Yepes, you know, he taught me meditation. He's worked with Borussia Dortmund, New York Yankees. He taught Oprah Winfrey and some big stars in America. How to meditate properly, and it's his form of meditation is transcendental meditation. Now, you know, again, like I talked about before, about how we've been a little bit of a closed shop and we're not receptive to new ideas. I think for me, I found it's personally beneficial to me, but also I found it's beneficial to athletes as well, because we always talk about this flow state. How do we get in the flow? And part of doing that for me has been meditation. And I think so, if we can include that in sort of pre-training, pre-match preparation, then that helps with it, because it doesn't matter how good a goalkeeper you are, how, you know, how good your skills are, how good your how talented you are. If you go into games and training in an emotional state which isn't optimum, then you're not going to get the best out of those other things. And of course, we know that decision making is a huge part of goalkeeping. It's a huge part of invasion sports, where you have to make decisions quickly. And if you're in a state that's very hyper and that you're very emotional, which, to be honest, as a player, I always was. And that's because I tricked myself into thinking that I always had to be sort of hyper-aggressive and really sort of boisterous and outgoing. What you often find is when you're in that state, your performances just fluctuate. So part of introducing meditation into training is to regulate that emotion. And that's what I found, that, you know, the best way to describe it, and the way that Ruben described it to me, you know, if you think yourself of a ship on top of the ocean, you can be blown about by the wind and the rain and affected by lots of outside influences. You know, the tides and the waves can affect you, and you pull from pillar to post all over the place. What the meditation has done, certainly for me, and what it can do for people, is it anchors you to the seabed, and so that you're not so affected by outside influences. And the process of, you know, sort of traveling down that line towards the anchor, which meditation does, it puts you in a state of mind that, you know, makes you able to deal with and everything else that comes to you, the stresses, outside stresses that come to you. So for me, that was, it was a big sort of, like I said, even though I'd done it before with guided meditation, listened to CDs and things like that as a player to try and relax me, I just think that, you know, going forward and in the future, it can be a huge part of not just goalkeeping, but helping athletes to perform at their optimum.
Yeah, really, really interesting point there, David, about meditation and the mental preparation, because I've learned through my years of playing that I am best when I'm calm. So how, I don't want to, you were talking about hyper and so on. I used to be like wanting to be hyper and listen to loud bass music before games to like be super hyped. But I found out that I was best when I was calm. So what did I do to calm down? I tried to have these trigger points where I calmed myself down. I found we talked to Michael Caulfield from Brentford, the sports psychologist there, about mental reset, which I've used a lot, but also not necessarily meditation, but I've done like yoga or like reading to really get my mind ready and calm and for the game. So today, for example, we have a game today here on June 25th for my new team in Norway. And I started the morning did my breakfast and so on, but then I sat outside, lovely day today, so I sat outside in the sun for 20 minutes reading in a book, and then we had a morning practice where we then you were talking about how do you prepare during practice, so we had some, because it's the first game, we were going through the set pieces and so on, really, so we had all the agreements ready, and now just after practice it's about for me to be calm and eat well and prepare well and feel my body is ready. So I really like that meditation. I'm gonna try do more of it. So my question here is, if you don't have a setup where you have a goalkeeper coach that tells you have to meditate, you have to be calm, you have to do this, this, and this, how do you, if you have a setup where you don't have a goalkeeper coach at all, how do you prepare yourself with mental preparation? An idea could be to listen to this podcast, obviously, but that's hopefully what we can bring out there. So what can you do if you don't have a goalkeeper coach, and how can you prepare optimal?
Well, I think exactly like what you've just said there, you've named different things that you can do to put yourself in that state. And I was exactly the same. You know, you listen to music that really sort of gets you up for the game, or you think that gets you up for the game to put you in the what you think is the best state. But if you can do that with loud music, you can do it other ways as well, you know. And I think that's For me, a clearer mind makes better decisions. I think that's what we're, you know, and that's at the heart of it, really, because if you're in a really sort of uptight state and you're aggressive, that's when you start making decisions off emotion rather than relying on your experiences. So, I mean, knowledge, you know, we talk about the power of preparation, but knowledge is power as well. And all the times that you've trained and the games that you've played before, you have to trust that in the game, those will come, you know, subconsciously or unconsciously, you do that in a game to make sure that you're making the right decisions. And like I said, we all know that feeling when a game can feel like it only lasted 20 minutes. It passes so quickly because we're in that sort of flow state and, you know, we don't have to think about things. It's a rare occurrence. So why should we have to wait for those rare occurrences? Why don't we, you know, why can't we do things that help put us in that state or put us in a state where we are we're likely to perform better? There's also another side of it as well. And you're talking about, you know, if you don't have a coach, and you can still you can still do this, what I'm going to mention now, if you don't have a coach, but you just need to find other avenues to do it. So as a coach and a goalkeeping coach, there's an opportunity there to have a closer relationship with the players because of the small group, because of the shared experiences. Of course, I've never prescribed it to the position that you had to have played the game or that you had to have been a goalkeeper to be a good coach. There's plenty of very good goalkeepers who weren't goalkeepers. But I think at some level, most goalkeeping coaches have either played it or take a great interest in the position, obviously. But I also think that having this relationship with other goalkeepers, there's this chance to have a closer relationship, and you can use that as well in preparation. So as a coach, you want your goalkeepers to be in the best possible emotional state, not only to perform, but also to receive coaching and to learn as well. And using my own personal experiences, I always use training a lot to get out any anger or frustrations. And there'd be things that would be happening outside of football in my personal life that I would bring to training. But I'd use the training to solve those problems or to solve the emotions that I was feeling. So then you come in and you work really hard and you're aggressive and, you know, you work that energy out of you. But was I in a state where it was an emotional state where I was learning? You know, that was optimum for learning. You know, was I just putting the work in, or was I really getting something out of the training session? Now, for me, looking back, I probably wasn't. All I was getting was the hard work out of it. So I also think there's a space before training or after training, doesn't have to be before, where goalkeeping coaches can tap into what's happening with a goalkeeper on a personal level. Now, I don't need to know what's a goalkeeper did with their boyfriend or girlfriend the night before. But if there's a problem there and, you know, maybe they're arguing with their partner or something's happened, then if you can talk about it for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, then perhaps they will be in a better state than they were before to approach training. And I don't need to be their best friend, but again, it's just been about being there on a personal level. And being someone, one, that can trust in to tell you things, knowing that it'll stay between the two of you, but also trusting you that whatever you say to them, you know, professionally or personally, that it's, you know, whether it's criticism or praise, that is, you know, there's a trust, that there's an honesty there as well. So I think that small side of it as well can make a big difference. And like I said, it's all about getting the best out of a goalkeeper. And said before, if it doesn't matter how talented you are or how, you know, how skillful you are as a player, as a footballer, as a goalkeeper, if you're not in the right frame of mind to take advantage of that talent, then, you know, you're selling yourself short.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point right there, that you have to be in the right frame of mind. Otherwise, you're, as you say, selling yourself short. And that's what I think every goalkeeper has tried, where you bring something on the field that you shouldn't bring on the field. And that's what we try to learn. And now we try to praise this in the podcast, where you have to try and get a clear mind before your game. Doesn't matter what has happened before. You can't change what happened. Also, if it happens in a game and you make a mistake or you go up 1-0, it doesn't matter. You have to be ready for the next play. So talking about this, we've talked about it a couple times on the podcast already, but maybe you have some different points on what do you do in a game where you maybe made a mistake, or your defender makes a mistake and you let in a goal and it's not your fault, or you come up and you're 3-0 up and you go to 3-3 suddenly. So that's the three different scenarios, but what is your cues to help your goalkeeper, but also to teach your goalkeeper how to handle these cues?
I think one of the big things is how you frame a mistake. Now, a lot of the time, especially, you know, with goalkeepers I've worked with, a lot of the time, especially when they're big mistakes, a lot of them are just one-off mistakes. And for me, it's not worth dwelling on that. It's not worth dwelling on sometimes I won't even mention it. Or I think it's different if it's an error that's constantly happening in their games. Of course, you've got to approach it and you've got to deal with it in training and try to correct it and deal with it that way. But also, you know, mistakes happen. And I also feel that if I don't make a big thing of it, and if I don't, and if I try and sort of limit to the effect it has, then they feel that as well. And I think that, but also I think other teammates play a big part in this as well. I've been there the same as every other goalkeeper. I've been in the game where I've made a mistake and 10 minutes later I'm still thinking about it, and when the ball's up at the other end and we have a corner, I'm still like trying to put myself in the position where I was thinking about, and that's when it takes you out of the game, and that's when you make more mistakes and it can affect you more. I think teammates have a big part in this, and I know that behaviours on the pitch can, as a team, can greatly help. Now, especially when I was at Aberdeen, I was there for 6-7 years. You're with players who you trust a lot, so you form a relationship. A lot of time when we concede a goal, one of the first things that the defenders came to me and did, or I, if they made a mistake, was to go on them and physically, you know, touch them physically, you know, like sort of put your arm around them and you talk positively to them and try and, like I said, it's about limiting the effect that the conceding a goal or conceding a bad goal has on the team. And if, you know, there's nothing worse as a goalkeeper, you know, that you've made a mistake and you're on the floor and you're criticizing yourself, and then you see all your players going away from you, shaking their heads, and you're thinking, oh no, they think I'm an idiot now, and blah, blah, blah. I think, you know, there should be more of a culture where you concede a goal or there's a mistake, all the team get together, all the defenders get together. And whether it's saying, you know, okay, it doesn't happen again, or yeah, it's no problem, we'll get another goal, just to make sure that it doesn't affect you in the game, and to minimize the effect it has.
Yeah, and overall, I'm happy that we talked about this topic today, because I think preparation is an important part of goalkeeping and also life in general. In my case, I perform way better in school and in the goalkeeping position when I'm prepared. So very happy that we got to talk about this today. But before we end this podcast, David, due to our name, Gloves On, we always have this question for our guests about favorite gloves and why. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about what kind of gloves you used when you were a professional and what kind of gloves that you prefer using today.
Well, one, I don't tend to use gloves when I'm coaching. A little bit, it was because I don't know, I have something in mind that I'm a coach, not a goalkeeper. I don't know what that is, but if I do use gloves, I just use like a normal pair of gloves that might have some grip on them. But and early in my career, I always want, you know, you had a favorite type of glove until it was sort of ended, that line ended, and you had to find a new one. And towards the end of my career, to be honest, I didn't really care, you know. But I think my favorite pair of gloves during my career were Roche Aqua. They were like, they were just plain white, and they had a light blue Roche arrow on the back. So that was probably around sort of the early 2000s. But I think Roche were probably my favorite brand of glove. Like I said, you like to tell your goalkeepers that it doesn't matter what gloves they are, it's what's in it that counts. But we all know that as goalkeepers, we have ones that we prefer. But yeah, they're probably my favorite gloves.
Yeah, that was an interesting point, because when I coach the young kids as well, we've talked about it before as well, Alexander and I, and with another guest on the podcast, I tend to not use gloves as well, where Alex is using gloves while he's coaching. I don't know if you have something to say about that as well, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, I love being a goalkeeper, and I'm still a goalkeeper playing, so I just love having the gloves on, but I also sometimes not use it because it's just easy if you have to change drills or whatever, but I just love the feeling of wearing gloves.
Yeah, and David, we are coming to the end of the podcast, so thank you so much for taking your time today and being a part of the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been a real pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
And for the listeners out there, please leave a review so we can optimize the podcast and make it even better for you guys out there. And make sure to check out David on social media platforms, myself, Goalkeeper Dane, Alex at Danish Goalkeeper, and of course, the main platform, Gloves On Podcast. Talk to you soon.